Our speaker tonight, I've known for several years, and she is an awe-inspiring person. I've known her for a few years now, and I've known her husband for, I don't know, too many years. No, maybe, I think next month will be like 30 years I've known him and stuff. And I look up to both of them and the work they do in this program. And I literally look up to them also. Tonight I have this special treat for you, and I'll introduce Sandy.
Good evening, everyone. My name is Sandy. I'm an alcoholic. It's truly a pleasure to stand before you and be able to share with you my life experiences. In 3 months, I will have 29 years in the program. If I'm so fortunate to keep on the path that I'm on now, and I'm here to tell you that this path starts one day at a time, sometimes 1 minute at a time, 1 second at a time, 1 micromillisecond at a time. It's been a interesting journey thus far. And recovery is similar to a spiritual journey. It's never ending. Once you start on it, if you do what you need to do, you will grow into what you want to be. But it takes work. When I started in the program, it was eons ago, we still smoked inside. You know, we had signs on the wall. I'm from California, by the way. Oakland, California. Oakland Raiders. Raiders. Golden State Warriors. Yeah. And when I started there, they had signs on the wall. When I decided to come in, okay, let me tell you what happened. What happened, what it was like, what it's like now. What happened was, okay, I'm gonna go all the way back. I have two sisters and a brother. My mom was a young woman living in San Francisco, struggling with three young daughters. She met my father, he married her, took us all out the hood. He was in the military, and so we started on that journey. I was a sick child, so I didn't hang out with the family. I didn't do anything. I just kind of stayed off in my room. I was a sick child. And life got good, but it was different. You know, every 4 years we moved. And so I didn't make those deep-rooted connections. And that's apparent now. The longest friendship I have is somebody in the program. Besides, not even family, because we moved so much that we disconnected from everybody every time we moved. And that was cool, yeah. You meet new people, go someplace, do some things. My mother and dad took care of us, and we weren't too aware of their issues until my father came back from his second trip to Vietnam, all freaked out, and PTSD, which they were not familiar with back then. He was just crazy. We were scared of daddy. Daddy ain't crazy. You know, don't yell. Daddy gonna freak out. You know, no footsteps in the house. And when you're a young child, it's hard to manage all those rules because you don't get it. Why is daddy acting crazy? But that was a big deal in my life. We were living in Panama. those of you who don't know, it's south of the United States. And we were living there. And it was beautiful. It was the tropics. I was cool. I was 16. I was getting ready for college. Life was good, floating on a cloud. My parents broke up. They moved us back to Oakland, California, straight to the hood. I went to a high school. I'm getting ready to graduate from high school. And I moved right into the hood. And this is what I see. I go drive up to the high school. There's a gate over 12 feet high, and it has a big giant hole in it. And I'm scared. I was like, oh my God, what are these people that make a hole? There's drug dealing going on. There's gangbangers everywhere. I'm not used to that. I don't like that. But that's what life became. And I had to assimilate. I had to make the adjustment. And I was still a sick kid at this time. And just wasn't used to it. I didn't make a lot of friends, and I got there in my senior year, and I had 3 months to graduate. How happy do you think I was? My mom was a piece of shit to me. I was mad at her every day. I was like, you brought us here, you left my dad, and now I have to deal with this. I went to school, and from the military school to this school, the educational balance was really different. Shakespeare, I'm sitting in there, we're reading Shakespeare, and it was going like this. And, to, and thee. That was the only words they knew. And in between it was, what's that word? I was like, oh, I'm not going to make it. I'm not going to make it. But I did. I made it to graduation. Then I knew everything, right? I had a plan. I was like, she doesn't know what she's doing. I'm going to help her out. I'm going to go to Job Corps. How many of you by hands have heard of Job Corps? For troubled teens, that's one step from prison. I'm smart. I'm going to go to Job Corps. Screw you. I'm moving out of your house. I'm grown. I'm going down there. I'm going to be a dental assistant or dental something. Dental hygienist. I'm going to be that. Did that. I'm pretty smart. I got through the class, and as I'm getting ready to graduate, you gotta go and, you know, kind of do your little residency and with the dentist. And so I'm being his assistant, and he did somebody's teeth, and he handed me some dental floss and asked me to floss their teeth. I was like, that's my last day. Not doing that. Not sticking my hand in their mouth. Of course I got let go. Like, no. And that's funny because I mean, that career never went anywhere. So first thing that I quit. Okay, then, so I graduated when I was 17. I'm out in the world, don't know nothing. I mean, I was a sick kid, so I stayed in my room. My mom cooked, my sisters cleaned, and they just brought me my homework from school. So I didn't know nothing. I didn't know how to cook, clean, nothing. And so this was then the height of the disco era. I don't know how many of you remember that, but I loved disco. Disco was awesome. It was exciting. It was hopping, popping, and I was right in the middle of it. And I, being at Job Corps, it was kind of like this locked situation that you lived in. They provided some education for you. And then in the evenings, like on Friday, they had this rule. You could leave, but you had to be back by 10. Where could you go and get back by 10? So of course, if you left and you weren't back by 10, you were locked out till 5. And so I'm in a city, I don't know these people, so if I'm out, I gotta hang out till 5, or I gotta get back at 10. You know, that was rough. So, of course, I start discoing, and I ran into this guy. I look across the crowded room, and I saw this tall, dark, and handsome. That was my kryptonite. We got together, made a couple babies, and life was bad from that moment on. I had one decision after another. And you know, it was too bad that I didn't figure out at my 18th birthday party, hugging the toilet, that alcohol was not my friend. I was drunk, blacked out at 18. It was terrible, but I worked it out. I made a plan, stayed in there a little while, got back up, and if I drank some more, I would get it together. I always had this misunderstanding that more alcohol would calm and cure whatever was going on with me. I always had that thought. And from that moment on, I was blacking out, doing things I couldn't remember, and just, I don't know, I never kind of did any research into it. Of course, we didn't have Google back then, but people would say things like, girl, you sure showed out that last night. You fell in the ground. Why you pee in the parking lot? What, you know, stuff. And of course, I didn't remember half of it. I didn't want to remember nor talk about the other half, you know, and it was just on half of it. I don't even remember. On and on and on. And I did those things and the children got caught up in the mess. And once I started losing my children, I started losing my children due to my behavior and my bad choices. And my first DUI, very proud to say, I got on Mother's Day. I had this car, and it was an Audi 5000, maybe. And it was a 78, 5-speed overdrive, and I had just learned how to spin the tires. Just learn. And so as I'm leaving the bar, I spin the tires right by the police station. They came to get me. Number one, went to jail. Not my proudest moment, because it's my first one. And I was like, oh, they don't know. I'm 0.26 maybe. You're double the legal limit, young lady. Whatever. You know, oh, you have a problem. Whatever. You know, first DUI, you go to, let's see, pay fine, go to some AA meetings, and do some weekends. Did that. And in California, they had this wood farm, and it was like, I don't even know how to explain it to you. If you go up Windy Hill, where there all that wood is on the side, what you go all the way up Windy Hill, and there's a fire department on the side, past Austell Road. It's a fire department on the side, and there's a lot of wood. There, this guy, he had a lot like that. And he had a trailer in there, and he had slave labor. And he would have people like us who would get DUIs, and he would have the guys come there, and they have to chop wood. And I was like, okay. So I had been going there so long that I started working in the little snack bar. Okay, working the snack bar. So that's DUI number one. 6 months later, in another county, DUI number two. Because I decided, I was not like one, if the party's going on now at 12:30 when I'm ready to go, I'm going home. I don't care how it happens. I'm getting in my car and I'm going home. I ain't waiting for you, don't want to talk about it. I just like to go home. And that's what I did. I tried to get home. And number two happened. Didn't make it home. Let's see what I was doing. I was driving from this town called Union City, and I'm on the freeway, and the reason they recognized me is because I was changing lanes a lot. I was going from the fast lane to the slow lane to the fast lane to the slow lane until they pulled me over. And went to jail, got in there this time, more AA classes. You know, you go to AA, get your card signed. I had that good get well card, get your card signed. What else did I have to do? Pay more money, and a couple of days in jail, and then weekends back at the Wood Farm. So, I continued on making poor decisions, doing stupid shit, on and on and on, till I got, bam, three strikes and I'm out. I got number three. I got into this courtroom. This judge had no mercy. I said, oh my God, somebody must have got killed in his family. You know, I'm sitting there, you know how you're talking to yourself while he's talking? And like, no, I really don't have that problem. Yeah, it's my third one. Maybe I might be the double limit, but you don't have to just talk like that in front of all of these people. You know, he's fronting me out, you know, putting my business out like that. And so I, number three, you go 150 days in jail. Yeah, but, because I'm smart, now I was working with him, I'm thinking about this. I've been at the Wood Farm so long, I convinced him to take me into work in lieu of confinement. I didn't have to go to jail, spent 75 days up at the Wood Man, working in the snack bar. At that point, when I went to court, he was supposed to show up and walk me out into the, you know, euphoria. And that didn't happen. Our arrangement kind of started falling apart. They said, excuse me, can you step to the side and take your belt and shoes off? I was like, what? No, I got arrangement. Then where's dude? He's like, he's not here. Oh, okay. So I'm standing over here tripping because this ain't worked out. I got a plan. And, you know, they put me in my little jail cell. I'm sitting there. The little baby Bible they got in there going, ain't no need in calling. The phone on the wall, pay phone on the wall. This time, ain't no need. Oh, I forgot to tell you, DUI number two, I had a fight in jail. I was, and I'm not a fighter. I was in there drunk as a skunk, and I'm trying to call my home, call everybody, hello. Can you come get me? And you know you can't get out until you sober up and all this other stuff. And I'm just worrying them to death. And this lady keeps touching me. So I'm talking to my people and I'm like, look, I need y'all to come get me. This is, you know, in jail. And they like, we know, heard. And she keeps touching me. So while I'm pissed. I'm like, excuse me. So I put the phone down and I go over there and start goofing it up with this lady. And she's so great. She got two little ponytails right here. So I'm fighting with a little lady in jail with two ponytails. And so when we're done, they come in, they separate us, take her out, right? And so I just go back over, hey, so none of that matters. Are you coming to get me? And then, of course, they hung up and didn't come get me. I had forgot about that until one day I was with my ex-family and we were at dinner and his mother brought it up. She said, you remember when you were in jail and you called me and you were fighting with that lady? They said all they could hear was, I was like, oh, okay. The humiliation continues. So anyway, speeding along to number three. Number three, I had a baby awakening. When they tell you you're going to go to jail, and when they told me, I don't know about y'all, but when they told me I was going to jail, I was like, this not good. And then they told me when they were finished that if I so chose to have number four, that I would go to prison. That was it. Not going to prison. I don't like prison. I didn't like jail. Okay? I didn't like jail. And for that reason, I couldn't go into a program. I had all kind of insurance where I could have went into a program, but I couldn't deal with it. I don't know. You ladies, I applaud you all, but I can't hang around people too long. I get weird, you know, and there's not enough medicine in this place to take care of me. So I just went to my meeting. I went to the meeting. They said, keep coming back. I'm like, right, okay. And I didn't talk much then because I wasn't sure that I belonged. And from what they were saying, I wasn't like them. And so I just kept coming back. And because, of course, I had to get my card signed, so I had to come. So, and I kept hearing things. And then eventually, little things started to connect. Like, oh, okay, you've done that. You know, and not just for women, it was men too, and young, old, everybody started to have something in common. And so I just kept going. I'm like, okay, kept going. Of course, they took my license, 3 DUIs, took my license, drove anyway. You know, what you gonna do? Gotta go to Ram. During that time, I remember I was one fortunate enough to be in between getting clean, I had a stroke. I had cerebral aneurysms and I had brain surgery. And it was before I got clean, because this is what I'm taking. And I'm gonna tell you how strong alcoholism is. I was in the hospital for 11 days with stitches, staples in my head, getting myself together, brain swelling. I was home for 3 months, drunk at the Christmas party in 3 months. Cool, because I had no respect for myself, my health, my life, and alcohol had just taking control. If I had one drink, would they say one is too many? 1,000 is never enough? When I got here, I didn't know what that meant. I said, it was bullshit. 1,000 could be enough, you know? And when they talked about the first drink, I was like, yeah, that's what sets the party off. Yeah, I was like so backwards. I was so backwards. And when I got here, my brain was so waterlogged that I just couldn't understand. I just sat there, just kept sitting there. And fortunately, I had to get my card signed so long that I dried out one day. One day, I understood that this was the place for me. One day, I heard them say the promises. I heard them say I was gonna know a new freedom. I was like, oh my God. You know, I was bound for so many years. I was bound with alcoholism. I was bound with, on top of that, poor decisions. I was bound with a life so wrapped. I was like an anaconda around. Do they choke you? Do they choke you? Around my throat. I wasn't happy when I got here. So if you're not happy, it's okay. Just stay around. Some days I'm not happy now. I have found out through being in this program that we tend to have unrealistic expectations. Life not happy every day. People live. People die. It's what you do about it. You know, I don't have a drink. I don't go out and get towed up. I don't take 40 pills. I just don't do those other things that I used to do to soothe myself. I don't do that. You know, you got to take a walk. You got to be creative. You got to think. We're not stupid people. We have addictive personalities and we let that run. Make poor choices. Today I can make a poor choice. You know, people driving too slow in front of me. I could push you. You know, if I went with everything that went on in my crazy brain, it would not be good. You know, sitting at work. I remember one day, but you know what? We can be creative with it. One day I was at work, and there's this girl. You ever been around a person that just, her conversation irritates most everybody? Because she talks too much, and she draws, and she repeats. And so right in the middle of it, I said, stop talking. It just, you know, she was like this, and I was like, my hat's going to blow off. It's going to blow off. Because I'm still crazy. I just keep it under wraps. I don't do everything I think. I don't do everything I feel. If I don't feel like, I didn't feel like going to work today. Got up and went. I need to check. I like living indoors. You know? I really do. And it's rough. Some days I wake up, I'm like, that job, people. And I do. I'm getting close to retirement, and I'm like, not close enough. It's rough. But I do what it takes. You know, they say if you're honest, open, and willing, you have a chance. It doesn't, you can go to 1,000. In the beginning, they said go to 90 meetings in 90 days. I swear to God, I went to more than 250 meetings in every day. I can recite all of this literature because I went to so many meetings. It's ingrained in me, in my person. And it's important why we come to these meetings and why they read the same thing, because if you read in the big book, it'll tell you we forget the pain and suffering of a week or a month ago. We do. You go along, or you reconstruct it in your brain. You know, it didn't hurt that bad. It wasn't that bad. You know, it's not gonna happen to me this time. You know, but it does. History repeats itself. If I drink, I didn't like the way I behaved. You know, I was thinking about it on a Friday like this, maybe on my way home from work. I wouldn't even get home. Slide by, and why I chose alcohol is because those other substances, number one, illegal, like to stay on the legal side. Number two, I found liquor was quicker. I walk into the liquor store, buy my bottle, and be on my way. You know, and I didn't feel obliged or obligated to share with anyone. So I stuck with liquor. I stuck with it until my stomach started bleeding. I stuck with it until I just almost ruined everyone and everything around me. And what is so marvelous about sticking around is that your family, who did never want to have time for me and didn't want to touch me when I was drinking. I remember when I first started getting clean, I used to think, oh, I've been clean 6 months. Let me call my mama. Hey, Mom, how you doing? She said, yeah, still going to those meetings? Keep it up. You know, and I was like, yeah, Mama, got a sponsor. I'm working some steps and feeling real good right now. She said, yeah. And what I didn't realize is my mom didn't care. She wanted to see some progress. She said, you hit the road and keep it going. Then talk to me later. Because I had shown her so many bad things that she wanted to see the good things last. And I remember she didn't turn around till I was like in the program 6 or 7 years. She turned around, you know, I'm calling her, talking on the phone. Hey, Mom, she's like, ooh, gotta go. You know, she didn't want to hear the negative. She didn't want to hear the crazy. But today, I call my mom every day, whether she like it or not, I call her. Hey, how you doing? Because my mom's 80 years old, and I want to check on her and make sure she's doing okay. She's still in California. And I can do that today. I can be responsible today. I can be consistent today, which wouldn't happen before. The only consistent thing I could do was get tore up on Friday. And then, you know, I remember toward the end, it would be Thursday. And if it was ladies' night, it was Wednesday. And if they had two for one, it was Tuesday. You know, you think about it today, and I've never stepped outside of the program. I've worked it. I started at the first step, and I continue to work through the steps. Because when you get through down to 10, then you're on maintenance, and you kind of repeat them over and over. Unless I, like, do something, my life becomes unmanageable, and I bounce right back up to step number one. But I have this toolkit that helps me. It helps me maintain my life. Fun stuff. This is set up in a really, really nice way. The steps are set up so that you come here and you become open, honest, and willing. And then they help you get the power. They say what we lack is power. We lack power. You need power to keep you from that first drink or whatever it is that's bothering you. And that power is the God of your understanding. And if you don't get that, it's going to be difficult to make it. It's going to be difficult because you need the... If they say if you think you got it together, go to a bar, pull up to the bar, and do some what? Controlled drinking. If you don't think you are an alcoholic or you don't have that problem, try it. And what I liked about this program too is that nobody tells me what to do. They give me suggestions. And I like that worked, you know. They suggest, well, Sandy, why don't you get yourself sponsored? Well, I'll think about that. Okay. Sandy, why don't you go to 90 meetings in 90 days? I'll think about that. Okay. Don't drink in between. Okay. You know, keep coming back. I like that. Get some hugs. Okay. And, you know, it was interesting where I found, and when I used to sponsor a lot, where a lot of the people fall short is they refuse to do a searching and fearless moral inventory of myself. Let me take the sting out of it. You've already done it. Everything in that fearless and moral inventory is history. You've done it. You know, if you choose to redo it, that's up to you. But you've already done it. And at that point, you start looking at your behavior. And when I took a look at my behavior, I was surprised because, I mean, it was very, what did I say, kindergarten-like. It was like, on my list, and it's like, okay. So I did my fearless moral inventory, and then got myself to another human being, the exact nature of my wrong. And so, when I made my list, I was like, oh, who do you hate? I was like, I hate the police because they keep arresting me. I hate the courts because they keep locking me up. And I got my mom there because she likes my brothers and sisters better. And it went on. But, you know, when you finish, it's a form, and it, you know, you kind of look at it and you put your information down. You're like, yeah, score, I'm done. And when you go back to your sponsor and you start talking about it, you start looking at what is common. And what was common is the reason. Why were the police arresting me? Because I was drunk and driving. Why was the court locking me up? Because I was drunk and driving. Why did my mama like the others better than me? Because I showed out at her parties where her friends were, and it wasn't fun for her. And so I started looking at those behaviors. I'm like, I don't like that. And so, I mean, afterwards, I felt really raw, sensitive, and I was very upset, like, shocked. It's like, it was all the time them. I'm pointing the finger at them. It was them. It was not me. But it was me. And I had choices in all those matters. So what I became entirely ready. I was ready. I was like, yeah, you know what? I'm ready. I'm going to deal with these shortcomings now. I'm going to get my angel wings, and I'm going to float up to heaven because I got this now. I'm ready. I know exactly what's wrong. We pinpointed it, talked about it. Now let's handle it. Liar. Cheat. I'm just morally depraved in so many ways. I just, you know, wow. I want to handle this. So I found out you can't do it all. Maybe today I can stop lying for a little while. Maybe today I can stop stealing for a little while. Maybe tomorrow I can stop whatever, cursing. I mean, but it's a struggle. That one, I put on that one, the struggle is real. Because I had those unrealistic expectations of the program that I was going to become perfect when I worked on my shortcomings. But what I become is I become a productive little crazy human, like real people. You know, you work on things. And I work on a little bit of this, a little bit of that, and more of that. And then I mix it up and work on some other stuff. And like now I mix church and meetings. I mix it up. I don't do too much of anything because I don't want to obsess on it. But, let me tell you about this. I made a list of all people I harmed, and I became willing to make amends with them. That is a very good lesson right there. Just because you're clean now, just because you are sorry doesn't mean that the person cares. It doesn't mean that they're going to like you, forgive you, or receive it in the manner in which it is given. Example, I tell this girl, I don't know what I did with her. It was very bad. It was very bad. And I got my little self together, and I went to her face, and I said, girl, you know, I'm sorry. I should have never did what I did. It must have been something about a man. I know it had to be. It was really bad. And so, you know, I got myself together, and I told her what I had to tell her, and she's like, bitch, I don't give a shit about what you're saying to me. I was like, what? Man, is she gonna fight? Wait a minute. Wait, this ain't in the AA handbook. Wait. I had to call my sponsor. I'm like, what's going on here? What's going on here? You know, and I learned at that point that just because you're making amends, just because you're sorry, just because you have worked it out with God, don't mean they have. So at that point, I started learning how I treat other people on the front end. I don't care how you act. I don't care. As long as you don't touch me, you're just talking. You know, you make amends with your God about that because I'm not getting involved no more. And experiences weren't all like that. Some amends I couldn't make. Some people died, thank the Lord, you know. Wrote him a letter. Some I did have to eat. I had to eat it, I'm telling you. But you think 4 is hard. Get to 8. And you don't have to make amends to everybody. Some things we just can't go back to tell people. You don't tell people things that are going to hurt them to try to relieve whatever you feel you need to do. You don't hurt other people. And that was 8 and 9. And now I'm on 10. My journey is on 10. I take regular personal inventory. And when I'm wrong, I promptly admit it, and I tell somebody right away. Gone. But I remember when I came in the program, I was just like bent over with problems. I was bent over with problems. I had court, I had kids, I had family, I had job, I had, you know, I was just crushed with problems. But as I worked the steps, they started to relieve themselves. And it was like a miracle. I was like, this program's a miracle. And they did. Life got better. Well, it's still not perfect. You know, I still make mistakes. And because we're obsessive people, let me tell you this. Whatever you is your thing, be it alcohol or other unfriendly substances, what happens is if you remove that, there's other things to take its place. Positive things that we can turn into negative things. I'm going to give a few examples. Food. Cigarettes. People. Sex. Gambling. The list goes on ad infinitum. Ad infinitum. It's endless. It's endless. So don't think if you just not doing your thing, that there aren't other things. Because we can switch up. I'm telling you, a cupcake, oh my God. If I get the right cupcake, it's on. I'm serious. And a lot of you are new, be careful. Your body jumps alive. Don't fall in love, get some recovery first. It's recovery first because, and I say this with all the earnestness, because it diverts you from what you're doing. If you're in a relationship, I've been in a relationship ever since I've been clean. I manage my recovery. I don't tolerate any other bodies doing anything that's against that around me. I don't. I have to keep myself safe. And if you do that, you know, I'm survivor in recovery. I'm survivor. It's all about survivor. I got to survive. If I don't stay clean, I don't go to work. If I don't stay clean, I can't come talk to you. If I don't stay clean, I can't be there for my friends, family, or anybody else. And it's a day-by-day thing. 11. Thought through prayer and meditation. This is work, you know. When I first got here, I had white noise. You know, it was so bad because I think, when you say something, not alcoholic, so many amphetamines in my brain that I couldn't sit still. And so I couldn't sit in the tub, I couldn't sit in the quiet. It took a while for it to calm down. Still a little iffy. So, prayer, meditation, you know, it's a constant battle. I work on it. But I always pray. I always pray that I can be better than I was yesterday. I always pray that I don't get Alzheimer's tomorrow. I always pray that whatever I've done in my future, my past, won't haunt my future so much. You know, because what happened is when I quit smoking, I got asthma. I didn't go to the doctor when I was using. I just, you know, made brandy and tea. I think every time I got a cold, I put brandy in the tea.
I never got well. I thought it was medicine. I didn't even drink brandy, but I was like, if I use brandy, it's medicine. I cracked myself up. And as a result of these steps, working these steps, I had some spiritual awakenings. And one, that I'm not the master of the universe. I'm just one of the persons who've been assigned to get better and to encourage those of us who want to get better. I work at a hospital, and it's a very interesting job. I'm the secretary for the Women's Center. So if anybody has a baby at Cobb Hospital, I'll probably see you. And what's interesting is encouraging those, because everybody thinks that if you have it, you're going to have a baby, that you're going to do that. But it's not always the result. And so we have to deal with the positive as well as the negative. And like I said, in life, things happen. And we are the ones who are strong enough to deal with it and encourage those who are not. Life goes on. People live. People will die. People close to us, people far from us. But what I had to learn is, what can I do about it? Just encourage those who need it. One of the, my favorite thing is the promises. And what I'm going through is losing interest in selfish things and gaining interest in my fellows. And what's funny is when economic insecurity leaves you. That was a big one for me, being from California, because when you come to Georgia, my salary was split in half. And I was like, I remember my brother telling me something like, some way he tried to balance it out. I said, my bills don't be split in half. You know, I'm greedy that way. And I had to do some work around that. And it's been good. One day at a time, one step at a time, sometimes. And then we intuitively know how to handle situations which used to baffle us. That's because I'm not all drunk and toe up trying to do something. Because I didn't think about what I was doing. You know, hanging out with people that I don't hang out today with. You know, and that's a funny thing they tell you in the book. And I highly suggest you read the book. Because when I opened the book, that was the first time that I recognized me. Because nobody could explain to me what was wrong with me. They're like, oh, girl, you just drink it too much. You could use some willpower. You better stop that. That ain't working. I tried that. I tried it a lot of times. I'd go 2-3 days. It was Friday. I was like, okay, I'm not going to go out and hang out with my friends. But by Saturday morning, I was doing the thing. You know, and I over and over and over and over and over again. The things that you wish for, sometimes, I remember I used to work with the ladies in some of the programs, and they want to get their children back, want to get that man back, want to get that job back. Sometimes that's not how life works. I didn't get my kids back until they were 18. It was awful. But they're healthy, happy, doing what they do. You know, I let people do what they do now. My whole attitude and outlook upon life has changed. I was able to, you know what they made me do? Let me tell you how I got through college.
In my third DUI, it took my license, and I decided the Department of Motor Vehicle screwed you. The court took my license, so I'm just not going to deal with it. So I didn't have a license for a long time. Then one day, I decided punishment was over. I won it. I went down there, and I said, give it to me. They said, no. You go to our multiple offender class. Oh, okay. Multiple offender class was 18 months. I had been in the program some years, and I'm going to multiple offender class. People are still drinking. 18 months. To say I was angry, my life became immediately unmanageable because I was mad. I was very mad about this. And so I went a couple of times, and I had to pay $200 a month to go. Not only that, I had to pay. So I'm going, and I'm angry, and I'm sitting there. After a while, I decide, you know what? I'm paying for this. I'm going to get mine out of this. So I started participating in the class. I started cutting out articles, coming to class, doing some research. And I got through the 18 months, went to the Department of Motor Vehicle, got my license, and I decided, hey, I can do that. I can go to college. Went to junior college, graduated with my AA, decided, hey, I'll go to the university. Went to the university, tried to work a little time, look, nursing life was rough. It was rough because I was in a failed marriage, going to college full time, and I started having heart problems. And that was very bad because the marriage was broken up, I was very, very proud. I was like, screw you, I'm leaving, I'm going over here, I've got my own apartment, and I'm gonna be good. And it was good. But I had been with this person for 25 years. And those things they tell you that you can become one when you're married for a long time. I had to change my name. Couldn't say my name. I couldn't even say my name because it was stuck to the old name. I had to lose part of my family. I had to deal with holidays. I had to do chores. I had to empty garbage. I mean, those kind of things. But I didn't relapse. I reached out. I went to more meetings. Whenever I have trouble, I go to more meetings. Whenever I have trouble, you'll see a lot of them. You're like, it must be trouble. Because I was still envy what I need to survive. And that's what it's about. I'm going to survive. I'm a survivor. And I'm not going to let anything or anyone take me out. I'm not. Just think about it. I was thinking about the other day, I was going to come to speak, and I'm thinking about, okay, so if I'm going to have a drink, what? Then this whole thing went on. Okay, first I have to, I'm not familiar with any liquor stores. They have package stores here, and that kind of threw me off. But they have drive-up. I told my friend, I said, they got drive-up here. I said, I'd have to figure out when I could do it, because I got to work. I got to hide from my husband. Got to plan that. So then I got to put out some money. Then I got to figure out where I'm going to drink, because I don't drink like normal people, so it ain't going to be fun for much longer. You know, if you do things the way I do things, you can't hang out with normal people for too long. And so I put all that in my head, and I was like, too much trouble. It's too much trouble. I might as well just go to the meeting, call somebody, step it out, walk it out. Walk it out. Man up. You know, you guys have been through hell. And
Heaven is just on the other side. I suggest you just do what you gotta do. And not what I do, or not what he or she or anybody else did. Do what you have to do. And just remember, the program is here to help you. This facility will give you the opportunity to stabilize, to step off on a good platform. Me, I was just out there wading in the water. It's as difficult as you make it. You make it hard? You don't want to talk about what's going on? It's going to be hard. It's going to be hard. You've already done it. Stop doing it. And the hardest part for me was to love myself and to feel that I was worthy. That I was worthy. As I have done, still today, my boss called me in her office. I'll be like, oh, shit, what did I do? Before I close, let me tell you about this. I go to work every day. I put in 8 hours of work. I got the best review ever. I was so happy, I damn near framed it. I was like, oh my God. I go to work and I do work. I'm not surfing the internet. I'm not calling nobody. I'm not waiting till 3:55, 6:57 until I get out the door. You know what I'm saying? I'm doing my job and I feel good about it. And today I can do that because I do the work. I do the work. And I don't care if they give me $3.75 an hour. They're going to get $10.75 an hour of work. Because that's who I am. I have integrity today. I have loyalty today. I have Gary today. And I just want to encourage you all and let you know that no matter how far down the scale you've gone, that there is hope. There's always hope. You don't have to go round and round and round and round. Get off the merry-go-round. And just anchor yourself down, dig down, and do it. Just do it. Nike, swish, that's what it means. Just do it. That's what I do every day. I just do it. I'm mad. I get up out of the bed. I'll just get there. It'll be okay. And I'll get there. You know? When I got home, I wanted to take my shoes off and go to bed. I said, no, I've made obligations. Don't take your shoes off and you'll get there. You know, I just encourage you. I think you're all brilliant, beautiful people. Just go to your meeting, get yourself a sponsor, and get the tools that you need under your belt.
Thank you so much. Well,
please stop
because I dropped my glasses.